This is Dan, a high school teacher in New Jersey, and I love listening to and learning from the School of Practice podcast on Edutopia Radio.
Katie, you are a middle school teacher.
Yeah.
I was also a middle school teacher, but today I would like to pretend to be your student.
Yeah.
And I'd love to have you walk me through the video exercise that you do with students when you're teaching them how to detect what's real and what's AI generated online. You have selected three video clips for me to watch, but only one is real and the other two have been manipulated in some way. And it's my job to spot their real video. Okay, which video should we start with?
Why don't you start with the bobsled video first?
Okay. We see a bobsledder going down, what is that called?
Like the chute?
The chute. And they are being trailed by a snowboarder who is also in the chute. This seems like something you should not try at home. Okay, which one should we watch next? One that looks like a news clip?
This is the opening of a newscast. Yep.
Is all about how deep fakes are getting easier to
create. We see two news anchors speaking directly to the camera. They're introducing a segment on spotting deep fakes. This is very appropriate for our episode.
And then the last video is a squirrel on water skis.
Wearing a little green collar.
I think it's a life jacket that it's wearing.
Of course, of course.
Yep.
Okay, Katie, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to guess that the squirrel was real. Because I want the squirrel to be real.
The squirrel is real and actually has a whole web presence, which was pretty fun to see.
As that squirrel should with that level of talent. I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. What you just heard is part of a lesson that teaches middle schoolers about spotting digital misinformation, including AI-generated images and videos called deepfakes. If you've been on TikTok or Instagram lately, you know what I'm talking about. Katie Copins, who you just heard, created this lesson with former K-12 STEM teacher and education researcher Andy Zucker. The idea is to get students to think critically about what they see online. And Katie says this 60-minute lesson pays off all year.
A one-class lesson that we can keep going back to and that had students really transcended the way they think is pretty powerful.
But it's not just about identifying misinformation related to classwork. Andy says their lesson builds skills that students need outside of school as well.
Young people are not good at evaluating information. They often think they're better at it than they really are.
A 2021 Stanford study found that two-thirds of high school students struggle to distinguish news stories from ads on a popular website. And now AI has entered the mix, bringing deepfakes, hallucinated sources, and more. For educators, it can feel daunting to help students learn to navigate all of that. Today, Katie and Andy are here to help. They'll talk us through how they teach kids to investigate what's real online and what isn't. We'll also talk about why evidence and prior knowledge play such important roles in their lesson. And because Andy and Katie have experienced teaching across grade levels, we'll also get their tips for adapting their lesson for younger students. Okay, let's get into it. We're going to come back to this lesson a little bit later and walk through how it works in detail. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the misinformation problem that this lesson addresses. Katie, could you describe the digital misinformation your students are encountering and explain why it's a problem?
Yeah, I think the one that comes up the most often is TikTok. And there are some things that are definitely real. It's just trying to navigate what is what. The other thing that happens a lot is AI auto-generates when they Google things. They're wondering, where is this from? So it's learning how to navigate it and to understand what is a reliable source.
And Katie, why is misinformation a problem?
Well, it's important to know what's real and what's not. Right there, if we are basing what we believe or decisions on things that aren't actual facts or information, I mean, that's problematic in so many ways, and it can be dangerous as well. I think this is a lesson that, yes, I'm a sixth grade science teacher, but it really goes beyond that. My husband is a high school teacher, and he ended up using this with his students as well to kick off the year, just like I did, because it sets the groundwork for what it means to use critical thinking skills in what we do in the classroom and outside of the classroom.
Andy, why is it important for young people to figure out what's true or not?
Part of the answer is that traditionally, schools have taught you what is true. Here's what you should know about history. Here's what you should know about science. But they have not taught people how to make those judgments for themselves. And that's a skill that is just so much more important in the modern world than it ever used to be.
Now, Andy, what do we know about the scale of digital misinformation today and how it's affecting kids? Many kids are online for hours every day. Does this mean that they're getting better at spotting misleading information?
Misinformation's been a problem probably in the prehistoric world. You know, somebody said, hey, there's a mammoth over there, but it wasn't true. But it's become a much bigger problem because of the internet. It's happening more often, faster, further than ever before. And young people rely on information that they see on TikTok or Instagram. If somebody's looking for information about, my friend's having real problems, let's say on mental health, a lot of the information that they might find is not accurate. And the same about dieting and nutrition and so forth. So it's really misleading a lot of young people.
Now, Katie, you mentioned fact-checking earlier. I want to talk a little bit more about lateral reading, which is basically teaching kids to vet online information like fact-checkers, verifying information across many sites rather than simply trusting whatever they see online. A 2022 study by Sam Weinberg, a professor of education at Stanford, found that lateral reading instruction almost doubled students' ability to evaluate the credibility of digital content. Katie, what is the life skill here that kids are learning?
Well, I think that's just a really important habit in general to see if this information is being shared, and it's being shared widely across credible sources, then you know you can trust it in a different way than if you're just seeing it at one spot. And I don't know if it's okay to go back to the lesson, but the best questions that kids asked were, oh, I see a reporter's name. Can I Google that reporter and see what else he has written? And then it went down this path of like, okay, these are other articles. It looks like he writes topics connected to science. It's like this web building in their mind of critical thinking skills.
After the break, we'll walk through Katie and Andy's lesson step by step, and they'll share everything you need to know to try it in your class. Be right back.
Do you wish you could spend less time searching for content and more time using it to support your students? Check out Homeroom, Edutopia's hyper-personalized feed designed specifically for educators. You'll get stories, strategies, and resources that match your interests, grade level, and teaching goals. It's like your own custom dashboard for smarter, faster planning, and it's totally free. Explore it now at edutopia.org/homeroom.
Let's shift now and talk about the digital misinformation lesson you created. I know you said you teach this early in the school year. What are the learning targets with this activity?
It was the second week of the school year, so it was very early for me. I kick off science with observation, inference, and we're setting the tone for really claim evidence reasoning. So that's where I'm going with it in terms of the work that we're doing. So back up what you're saying with the evidence to have to support it.
Andy, why are skills like observation, inference, and identifying evidence so important for kids determining what's real and what's fake online?
It gives the individual some power not to be fooled, to use evidence and reasoning to make decisions that affect them.
Okay, Katie, let's walk through how you teach this lesson. How do you start things off in class?
It began with, all right, we're going to look at something online. And it actually kickstarts with that video of the cat diving off of the diving board in a very fancy flipping way.
Right. So this is your hook for the lesson to get students engaged. It's a video clip and it's pretty clearly AI generated. And just a note to listeners, We'll link to all the videos and additional resources in our show notes.
Yeah, so I don't say anything else, and I show it again. I show it in slow motion, and then hands start to slowly go up, and students say, I don't think that's real. But before I even began, I should say, I did ask who in the class has ever had a cat, kind of just setting the tone, right, for this idea of prior knowledge. And then students shared, my cat does not like water. I can't imagine cats being able to do this, let alone being willing to do this. And then from there, it became, okay, we're going to talk about some of these skills and apply them to a couple of other videos.
Okay. And we should note that the videos you use in class are different than the ones we used earlier in the episode, but it's the same idea. Three are intentionally misleading, some with AI-generated images, and one video is factual. And then students have to decide which video is real. It's also important to note that you and Andy made clips of these videos rather than sending kids to YouTube or TikTok where there might be giveaway clues about whether or not a video is AI-generated. So just very quickly, tell us about the four videos you selected for this part of the lesson.
So the first one was, it's a video of newly discovered species.
Right. We see some underwater creatures kind of floating around. They're translucent and glowing. It's really hard to tell what they are exactly.
The next one, you have a marble that's in a glass beaker and someone is spinning it with their hand. And it claims that this is perpetual motion, that this won't ever stop. The next one is a celebrity. It's Jennifer Aniston pitching a MacBook giveaway. And then the last one is someone who is wearing a button-down shirt and they are swimming underwater with an anaconda. So they're all interesting, all engaging. All the videos are under 30 seconds, so it's quite quick.
Okay, there's another step still to come in your lesson, and we'll circle back on that in a bit. But first, let's back up and go over the details of your lesson so far. So you start with an AI video of cats diving into a pool to get students engaged, and students discuss what they think is happening in the video, and you're introducing the idea of looking for evidence to support their reasoning. Then you move on to the activity I tried earlier. First, the whole class watches all the video clips together, then kids get 10 minutes to watch the videos again on their own, and each student tries to identify which video is real and which ones are intentionally misleading or AI generated. And you give them sentence stems to guide their thinking here. Can you share a few examples of those prompts?
There's a Google Doc that has all four videos, the clips. And so I always use a little pencil as my visual clue to help kids know when to write on anything that is digital. This is way back from COVID, right? When we were doing a lot of online work. So under each clip, there's a pencil that says, I think video, so if it's the first one, video one is real or fake because, and they were gonna highlight real or fake, and then it's the because that matters. So it's really thinking about backing up what you think with the why behind it.
Now, after the first 10 minutes are up, your students, this is the fun part, they move to one of the four corners in the classroom to indicate which video they think is real and discuss their reasoning with the students who are also in that corner. If I were a fly on the wall, what sort of things would I hear students saying to each other about their reasoning?
Kids were excited to see their friends if they were in the same corner. They kind of got together like, yeah. And when they were talking about it, there was like defense of what they believed and why. And then I didn't reveal at that point. They went back to their seats and I went one by one through them to talk about how they basically tried to trick you.
And what does that discussion sound like in class?
So I start with a new species and talk about AI-generated images. And then the marble perpetual motion one actually has a little bit of trickery. You can see in the second video the full camera span to see. I'm trying to remember, Andy, was it like magnets below it that was making it perpetually spin?
Yes, I think it was electromagnet.
So that is just tricking. They are not showing the full lens of the camera to give the full scene of what's happening. The Jennifer Aniston was a deep fake. And then the person swimming with the anaconda was real. And then we look at his website and realize what he is. He's a scientist who has a TV show.
So you're actually breaking down with kids how these videos were manipulated and strategies to identify misinformation, like reverse image search, which is a Google tool that can help you find more information about a specific image. Now, earlier we were talking about lateral reading, which is basically teaching kids to cross-check information with multiple sources, like fact checkers. I want to share a strategy from an educator in our community, Catherine Gibbons. She gives students a viral claim, like a shark was found swimming on a flooded highway. Then she asks students to open new tabs and investigate questions like, what do other sources say? Are reputable outlets covering this? Who originally published the claim? I love these questions. What would you add here?
So I think paying attention to the who. Who is this information coming from? And sometimes it can be also the why. What is their agenda? Is someone trying to sell you something? Is someone just trying to get clicks? And I think that all fits into the critical thinking aspect of it.
Do you have moments in class where kids are debating about what source is actually reliable?
Absolutely. And what's been really exciting this year, I had not done the lesson prior to the school year, is they keep going back to the lesson. I mean, we are in March, and especially right now where they're doing research of things, I'll just hear it come up, especially that tree octopus. It stayed with them. And I think a lot about the ratio of time that you give to something. And for very little time, this has stayed with them in a way that's very powerful.
You just mentioned the tree octopus, which takes us into the part of the lesson where you invite students to transfer the skills they gained through analyzing all those video clips into a new activity. And you give students links to two websites. One is about the endangered Pacific Northwest tree octopus, and the other is about the discovery of a giant anaconda. Kids have to figure out which website has misinformation, and I love the prompt that you use here. You tell students to be both detectives and lawyers, gathering evidence to defend their opinion. I'm curious, what is the vibe in the classroom at this point?
So it was a huge win. Kids asked for more time. They were so determined to back up what they believed to be true. And if kids are on their own asking to do work at home, I mean, that is a win. As a middle school teacher, the things that came up, even someone learning the Latin name for that Pacific tree octopus was not real. The university was not real. Like what you were talking about, the lateral, like they were doing a lot of side research. And I truly let them follow their path. I just kept giving some clues like, okay, use that reverse Google image search we talked about.
So this lesson is a big hit with middle schoolers, and you said your husband also used it successfully with high schoolers. If any elementary teachers out there would like to adjust this for younger students, do you have any tips for them?
You've already got them hooked based on the videos themselves, and I think that's universal across ages. The lesson itself is very visually easy for students. I don't know what their fluidity is at younger grades with using Google Docs or something like that. So it could easily be transferred into a discussion-based activity that is still teaching those skills, or in small groups they're talking about it and they have a whiteboard to write down some of their ideas in a pretty simple format.
You know, I could see with younger students you could say, what can you discover about XYZ University? And sort of prompt them to then go look up that information, right? Whereas the middle school kids went and figured that out on their own. I could see maybe a little more prompting with the younger learners.
I think I would also start with them by saying, what are some things that you think you know about octopus, right? Almost priming them with working through some of that prior knowledge. And that's what you need to be careful too, because sometimes people think they know things that are real that aren't. So then maybe gently navigating that.
Right. And you intentionally built this into your lesson. When kids watch the real video about the scientist swimming with the giant anaconda, they gain background knowledge that helps them later when they evaluate the website about anacondas. Why is tapping into prior knowledge such an important part of spotting digital misinformation?
I guess if I think about opportunities for kids to be misled, if they don't have prior knowledge, it's a leverage point to get that misinformation in there. But also, even if you don't have the prior knowledge, something might feel a bit off to you. Let's go from there.
Okay, now I have one last question. What would you say to teachers who are listening right now who are thinking, yeah, this is really important, but my school day is already super packed. I have to get through all of my curriculum. I just don't have time to add media literacy lessons to what I already have to teach.
I would encourage teachers to put in short activities that deal with media literacy that really are not going to get in the way of teaching their curriculum. It's not going to take a lot of time.
And across so many subjects, you talk about evidence. And so for me, I just shifted what my lesson would have been that day to this. I still had the same outcomes. Students learned about observation, inference, evidence. It was just in a different format that I originally would have done.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, Katie and Andy built this lesson around super engaging video clips, like the AI-generated diving kittens or the scientists swimming with a huge anaconda. These are the kinds of videos kids encounter on their own social feeds, and that makes the lesson immediately fun and relevant for students. Two, determining what's real and what's fake online is important for students of all ages, and this lesson can be adapted to work across grade levels. If your younger students aren't able to do the cross-checking research on their own, try prompting them to research the scientist in the anaconda video or verify the Latin name for the Pacific tree octopus. And three, teaching students how to make observations, gather evidence, and combine them with background knowledge to make inferences isn't just part of digital literacy. It's the foundation of critical thinking. Those skills are essential for learning, and this lesson helps students build them and practice them in a real-world context. Special thanks to Katie Copens and Andy Zucker. Katie teaches middle school science in Maine, and Andy is a former STEM teacher and education researcher. Andy and Katie also wrote an Edutopia article that you should definitely check out. The article has links to the Google Docs they created for students and teachers to use during the lessons, along with all the video clips you'll need. As always, you'll find the article link in our show notes, and we'll also include links to the research we mentioned. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions, and let us know what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us a rating and a review. This helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Ann Noisani and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. Special thanks to Yuki Terada. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.